This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Wahib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The United States has been very careful with regards to this Niger crisis. It has yet to qualify it as a coup, officially at least. So everybody involved is in a very difficult situation, be it the Western countries, or the African countries, West African countries, or the coup leaders in Niger themselves. So it's a very tricky situation.
That was Timothée Donangmai, chief of VOA's French to Africa service, on the latest from Niger. Details coming up. Also, Senegal is experiencing its largest protests in decades. And former U.S. President Donald Trump will appear in court today for allegedly trying to overturn the results of the 2020 election. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Senegal is experiencing its largest protests in decades. Thousands of mostly young people have taken to the streets. Businesses have been looted. University students have pelted police with rocks. And the internet was shut down. At least 8 people have died, and one senior official described the country as being on the verge of an apocalypse. For the latest, I talked with our reporter, Alpha Diallo, who is right in the middle of the action in the center of Dakar.
Yes, the latest that situation is very precarious. Well, if you, for example, in the outskirts of Dakar, some of these places like Grand York, Peking, and of course, Tenge, there are still some running battles between security forces and young people who are very angry about Mr. Sonko's detention in prison, and they are still looting, as you have said. So many businesses have been vandalized, and of course, as you put it, the internet has been suspended, and some social media platforms have also been suspended, like TikTok, because the government says that people are using TikTok, to use it as, as subversive means against the government. But also, but inside the city of Dakar, it is relatively calm. Since yesterday, there was no major demonstration in Dakar. You also mentioned about the university. Now, these demonstrations came at a time when, the university was in holidays. So most of the students now, most of them have gone back to their villages, their towns. So around the university, I visited there today, but it is still barricaded with the police, and there are only few people. So you don't see the students are not, they are not there. So as of now, things are relatively calm in Dakar, but on the outskirts there are still some, demonstrations. Spontaneous demonstrations here and there.
So, Alpha, what are the demands of the protesters?
They only have one demand. Their demand is to release the main opposition leader, Mr. Ousmane Sonko, unconditionally and without any delay, because they said that this fighting is just starting. So if Mr. Sonko is not released unconditionally and allowed to participate in the forthcoming presidential election, in February 2024, then this country, there will be no election in this country, and they may even make this country ungovernable. These are something that has been spread on social media everywhere. And they are determined, especially, in Chikansor, in southern towns of Chikansor, where Mr. Sonko is the mayor. That place is still trouble, is breaking everywhere. Last night, some angry youth, stormed near the military, military barracks. But the army, they were very cautious. They haven't used force against them. But things are still very precarious in many towns in Senegal.
And as you said, Alpha, businesses have been looted. The internet has been shut down. How does that bode for the economy of the country? The
economy is just experiencing a very, very difficult moment. Because here, if you come, even some banks which are located in the outskirts of Dakar, they are not operational. That means that those who want to, and it coincides, at the end of month, more many people will, you see them, will be queuing at the bank to get the money. But even if the internet is suspended, it's very difficult for the bank to be able to be operational.
And lastly, Alpha, you are in the center of Dakar, very close to Mr. Sonko's, Osman Sonko's residence. Is the place surrounded? How does it look like from where you can see it?
But the place is very quiet. The street where he lives is very quiet because people are not very happy that he is in detention. His supporters, they are saying that, they will do everything possible to make so that Mr. Sonko will participate in the forthcoming election.
That was Alpha Diallo in the middle of the action. He talked to me from Dakar. Thousands of people rallied today in Niger's capital, Niamey, in support of the coup that toppled the democratically elected government as security concerns mounted among Western nations. The demonstration was called to mark the anniversary of the West African nation's 1960 independence from France. Timothy Donan Gmai, the chief of VOA's French to Africa service, tells me that protesters were brandishing giant Russian flags and chanting anti-French slogans.
Yes. One must point out that today is National Day in Niger. It's the 63rd anniversary of Niger's independence from France. So on this occasion, many people went out to express their support to the coup leaders. Some had Niger's flags, others carried Russian flags and were screaming anti-French slogans. And so this is a trend that we've seen since the beginning of this coup in Niger. More and more people in that country are coming out in support of the coup leaders.
The protests comes as Western African military chiefs are meeting in Nigeria's capital, Abuja. And ECOWAS team also is talking about this whole thing in Niger. Basically, you think these side talks in Abuja and one ECOWAS team talking in Niger will come up with some kind of a result to bring back, to reinstate Bazoum, who remains under house arrest?
It's not likely to get Mr. Bazoum back to power because yesterday, in an address to the nation, military leader General Abdurrahman Tiani denounced those who condemn the coup, and he also called on people in Niger to come out and defend Niger's democracy. So it's hard to see the military leaders give up their power and relinquish their power in favor of President Bazoum. Now, the ECOWAS and ECOWAS military leaders are in a tough spot. They said a military intervention would be in last resort, but you have Burkina Faso, Mali, and Guinea who came out in support of the coup, and the latest country is Mauritania. So we see two camps emerging in West Africa about this coup, and this has not been seen before, so this is a very tough situation.
Where does, I'm just curious, Timothy, where does that hate for the French comes from? Because like you were saying, people were brandishing giant Russian flags and chanting anti-French slogans at the demonstrations.
The anti-French feeling was born out of the perception that the former French colonies among the least developed countries in the whole world. You have countries like Niger, countries like Chad, Central African Republic, the poorest of the poorest. Yet those countries have resources. Like Niger has been exploiting uranium for years, but France has been the sole buyer. The French company is the one that has been exploiting that uranium. And people in Niger feel that they are only receiving a meager part of the revenue generated by that uranium. So that's on the economic side. On the political side, people in French-speaking Africa think that France has been propping up corrupt regimes for years, has been tolerating those regimes. And what made it worse was France's support for the coup in Chad. You know, General Mohamed Idriss Déby Itno succeeded his father in spite of the constitution that said that it should be the speaker of the National Assembly. So all that is fanning the flames of anti-French resentment in West Africa.
And lastly, Timothy, as tensions mount, Britain and the United States have announced they're pulling back embassy personnel as a precaution. Anything on that front that you can report to us?
On that front, President Joe Biden called for the immediate release of President Mohamed Bazoum. The United States has been very careful with regards to this Niger crisis. It has yet to qualify it as a coup, officially at least. So everybody involved is in a very difficult situation, be it the Western countries or the African countries, West African countries, or the coup leaders in Niger themselves. So it's a very tricky situation.
That was Timothy Donangmai, the chief of VOA's French to Africa service. The White House says it is closely watching the situation in Niger, and as we just reported, U.S. Embassy is preparing to evacuate staff from the West African nation, with the coup plotters staring down a Sunday deadline to reinstate the deposed democratically elected president. Analysts say Moscow and Beijing are also monitoring Niamey and looking for opportunities to widen their influence. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Washington.
This is becoming a sadly familiar image in West Africa. A group of military officers, unhappy over poor security and bad governance, imprison the country's leader, take over the airwaves, and declare themselves in charge. That's what happened in 2021 in Mali, later that year in Guinea, in 2022 in Burkina Faso, and last month in Niger. Coup spokesman, Colonel Major Amadou Abdrakmane.
Ce jour, 26 juillet 2023.
Today, 26 July 2023, he says, we, the forces of defense and security, reunited as the National Council for the Safeguarding of the Country, have decided to put an end to the regime which you know. But optics aside, this West African coup is different and has Washington watching hour by hour as it sees whether frantic diplomacy will bring the deposed president, for whom the State Department has expressed unwavering support, back to power. That's because Niger is a key U.S. partner in fighting Islamic extremism in the Sahel, with a critical U.S. drone base and hundreds of U.S. troops in the country. VOA spoke this week with the nation's ambassador to the U.S., Ambassador Mamadou Kiare Liman Tingwiri.
Less than 2 weeks ago, we had here a team of our militaries for a meeting with the United States authorities. We went together to the Pentagon. We went together to the State Department. A week later, we're doing bad. What does this mean? It doesn't make any sense at all.
Analysts note that this fragile, resource-rich region is also in the crosshairs of other major powers, with Russian mercenary group Wagner increasing its foothold in neighboring countries. Sean McFate is a professor at Syracuse University and at the National Defense University. He spoke to VOA via Zoom.
This is a proxy war. And there's been an ongoing proxy war in Africa for the last 3 to 4 to 5 years, at least. It's sort of a new scramble for Africa. But here, the external forces are the United States, Russia, and China. And Russia likes to conquer, if you will, through the Wagner Group. China likes to use economic warfare called Belt Road Initiative.
The State Department said they haven't seen proof that Russian mercenaries were involved, but said they will likely try to capitalize on the instability. Spokesman Matthew Miller.
I would not be surprised to see Wagner attempt to exploit this situation to their own advantage, as they've attempted to exploit other situations in Africa to their own advantage. And when I say to their own advantage, I mean to their own personal financial advantage, as well as their attempt to expand their influence on the continent.
McFate says he doubts the putschists in Niamey will bend to pressure from Washington or the West.
A lot of Africans don't see the United States as a committed partner. So I think that the opportunities for carrots and sticks from Washington are limited, and they're frankly being challenged by Russia and China.
Western nations, including the U.S., immediately stopped aid to the landlocked country. The ECOWAS regional body gave the coup leaders a Sunday deadline to reinstate the president and a threatened force if they don't comply. Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Former U.S. President Donald Trump is due to appear in court today after a grand jury in Washington, D.C. accused him of illegally trying to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more from Washington.
A third indictment for former President Donald Trump, this time in Washington, for illegally trying to overturn his 2020 election defeat. Efforts that prosecutors say inspired many of his supporters to attack the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021. Jack Smith is the special counsel for the U.S. Department of Justice.
The attack on our nation's capital on January 6, 2021, was an unprecedented assault on the seat of American democracy. As described in the indictment, it was fueled by lies. Lies by the defendant.
Trump will be arraigned in court Thursday in Washington, where a grand jury of American citizens indicted the former president as part of a Justice Department investigation. The four-count indictment accuses Trump of conspiracy to violate Americans' right to vote, conspiracy to defraud the government, obstructing an official proceeding, and conspiring to obstruct an official proceeding. The nation's top law enforcement official, U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland.
Mr. Smith and his team of experienced, principled, career agents and prosecutors have followed the facts and the law wherever they lead.
Trump, currently the frontrunner for the 2024 Republican presidential nomination, released a statement from his campaign describing the charges as persecutions of President Trump, reminiscent of Nazi Germany and the former Soviet Union. Rudy Giuliani is a former attorney for Trump.
What they did here is an abomination that will live in history as one of the worst violations of free speech ever.
But one analyst said the charges are related to Trump's actions encouraging his followers to storm the U.S. Capitol. Cheryl Bader is the associate professor of law at Fordham University School of Law.
We have a First Amendment right to be protected in our speech, and particularly political speech is afforded the highest degree of protection. But the indictment shows that Trump was not just lying about election fraud, but he used those lies in order to try to subvert the will of the people and to actually overturn the results of a lawful election.
Lawmakers who served on the January 6th committee investigating Trump's involvement said a fair trial will demonstrate the United States' commitment to the rule of law. And some American voters say the charges are overdue. Voter Jordan Tellez is a resident of New York City.
I think it's an embarrassment for the country. I mean, that's a former president. He was just indicted on election fraud. It's pretty embarrassing, isn't it?
Trump accused prosecutors of timing the charges to distract attention from the ongoing legal troubles of Hunter Biden, the son of his anticipated 2024 election rival, President Joe Biden. Meanwhile, Trump has also been indicted on unrelated charges in New York and Florida involving the mishandling of classified documents and campaign fraud, and could face even more charges in Georgia in relation to 2020 election fraud. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
The 2023 Mandela Washington Fellowship Summit, a three-day U.S.-sponsored program that let over 700 young African leaders network with U.S. policymakers and entrepreneurs, wrapped up yesterday. Jamila Mayanja, a 2015 alumni of the fellowship and Ugandan entrepreneur, received the Mandela Washington Fellowship Leadership Impact Award. Her work with her company, Smart Girls Uganda, has empowered several girls and women by equipping them with skills to venture into male-dominated careers such as engineering. VOA's Mike Hove sat down with Mayanja to talk about her award and goals.
I founded a social enterprise called Smart Girls Uganda. It's a social enterprise. I started to empower girls and young women to live a healthy and economically sustainable lifestyle. And I do this through one of our programs called the Girls Retools, where we train young, vulnerable young women in male-dominated, non-traditional STEM skill sets. That is like mechanical engineering, electrical engineering, plumbing, building and construction. And then we make sure they are fully government certified and running their businesses, or we connect them to already running businesses. Then using human-centered design, I work with them to innovate products that help the communities they come from. For example, we've innovated what we call our recycled solar smart bag. It's a bag that we make out of recycled waste to make it waterproof and also add a solar panel onto it. So when it's a school bag for young girls to help them stay in school during their menstruation periods. Mm-hmm. So, but also give them lighting after dark to be able to read their books. And with that bag alone, we've been able to keep more than 30,000 young kids in school. Mm-hmm. And with the Girls with Tools, I've been able to graduate more than 300 young women who are all working either in existing workshops or starting their own businesses that we also host at our center.
So all of this sounds like it's STEM-driven.
Yes, yeah.
Which leads to my next question. STEM typically across the whole continent, it's male-dominated.
Yeah.
To what extent is your program re-changing that narrative to ensure that women get the same opportunities in STEM?
I love that you say that. That's why I started the Girls with Tools. I really wanted to prove that women can really take up these STEM careers. Some of the girls have trained in electrical engineering. One of them is in the oil industry in Uganda and is doing amazing. And to the extent, just recently, in this particular program, I enroll girls, but I started enrolling 20% boys who would study with my girls for them to know that girls can actually do this. Mm-hmm. But most importantly, people think it's only the educated girls. These are girls I pick from vulnerable situations. They're going through gender-based violence. They've dropped out of school. They're teenage mothers. But show the community that STEM doesn't need you to be brain, full brain. It just needs that person who believes that you need the skill. Mm-hmm. So I give them the skills to prove to society, to challenge that status quo, that no matter whatever background this woman is coming from, she can be that mechanical engineer. Mm-hmm. She can be that amazing water engineer. Mm-hmm. And they've done that.
That was Jamila Mayanja, recipient of the Mandela Washington Fellowship Leadership Impact Award and the founder of Smart Girls Uganda. The United States is praising Kenya's interest in leading a multinational force in Haiti, but the Associated Press says weeks ago the U.S. openly warned Kenyan police officers against violent abuses. Now 1,000 of those police officers might head to Haiti to train the Haitian National Police, restore normalcy, and protect strategic installations. Kenya's police have long been accused by rights groups of killings and torture. Interior Minister Kithure Kindiki said police have remained neutral, impartial, and professional. Observers note Kenyan forces have relatively little overseas experience in such large numbers and do not speak French, which is used in Haiti. Kenya plans to send a task force in the coming weeks to assess the mission's operational requirements. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Nicole Peters, and our engineer, Adrius Rigas, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.